Is in the books. Congratulations to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, your champions. Welcome to Third and Long, your inside look at the CFL. I'm Andy McNamara, and you're listening across Canada on the Sportsnet Radio Network. What a great cup it was. Two droughts looking to end. Only one could, of course. And the Bombers take their first championship since 1990, 33-12 over the high octane Hamilton Tiger Cats. We're going to break it all down. Also, swing around the entire league for offseason storylines and talk to one of the heroes of the game, Justin Money Medlock. I coined him that back in 2015 when I was calling Ticat games. Medlock was incredible. 6-7. And we'll chat with him. Look, he played for both teams. And be able to see, okay, hey, what does it mean to you to be able to deliver and end a drought like the one for the Blue Bombers? So we'll chat with Justin Medlock, the tremendous kicker, in a few minutes' time. Before that, though, Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca, will take more of an Eastern look at back at the Ticats, the division, and some general offseason storylines like quarterback movement, free agents. We've already started to see some roster movements from around the league. Like it happens quick. Like the 2020 season is going to be here before we know it. So we'll talk to Chris O'Leary. After him, Justin Medlock. And then we'll go out west. Danny Austin does a great job covering the Stampeders and the CFL for the Calgary Herald and the Calgary Sun. And we will go into a deep dive across that division, expectations for next year, free agent possible movements, and really take a look back and celebrate what the Blue Bombers had done in an incredibly entertaining CFL season. So we'll get into that. But you got to look at, for this game, the Bombers. Andrew Harris really stands out to me. Because since he came back from suspension, right, from the PED accusations, didn't seem himself. Let's be honest, didn't seem himself. He found himself in a humongous way, 134 yards on the ground and a touchdown. It was a big middle finger to the whole world for Andrew Harris saying, hey, you know what? Say what you want. I'm going to go off. He also caught five passes and another touchdown there, so two total. One, the most outstanding player and the most valuable Canadian awards, which is a rarity, and became the first Winnipeg Blue Bomber running back in 61 years to run for more than 100 yards on the ground. That's just the second one all time either. And that was in front of a raucous 35,439 fans at Calgary at McMahon Stadium. Just a tremendous atmosphere. Sad to see Brandon Banks had to leave in the third quarter with a leg injury. That was heartbreaking. We talked to Speedy B last week in his journey after winning the season-long MOP. And to see him leave, you wonder if things might have changed a little bit if he was in there. But I got to say, I don't necessarily think so. Like, the Bombers' plan was phenomenal. It was run the ball, ground and pound, be safe with it, and then try to capitalize on any mistakes that the Hamilton Tiger Cats made. Dane Evans, it shows up as two interceptions. He didn't look poised, but let's be honest. A couple balls went off of fingers and hands and were picked off. Now, could you have better touch on the ball? Sure, but for a first-year starter coming in partway through the season, Dane Evans has nothing to be ashamed of. Oh, man. And he could be the starter next year. That's another storyline to track. How is that going to play out with Jeremiah Masoli and Dane Evans in Hamilton? So disappointing for the Ticats after their 15-win season. It was spectacular, and they still have the pieces to get back, but two great coaching jobs and efforts. It was a nice game to celebrate two clubs that overcame things in different ways. And how about this? I was saying it since the playoffs. The Zach Caleros revenge tour complete. I tweeted that out at AndyMCD1, and you can follow on Twitter the show as well, at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL, just with a video game kind of gif saying, Zach Caleros complete. Level complete. You beat the Rough Riders, who you started the season with and got knocked out the first game. They trade you to Toronto. Then you got to Winnipeg, sat out, won all four of his starts. Think about what the Bombers have gone through. Matt Nichols gone, trying to figure things out with Chris Streveler. The combo of Caleros and Streveler, that's what I said on last week's show. If the Bombers can be a little unpredictable, safe, but be able to go with, okay, Caleros can beat you through the air, efficient if nothing else, 74% completion, 17 of 23. Streveler can mix it up on the ground and through the air. He threw the game's only passing touchdown. And then ground and pound it with Andrew Harris. That's how you're going to win. They did. It's a heck of a season. But you know what? Let's go and look back at the Ticats, at the game, at the East, with Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca. Chris, we look back at this game, this Grey Cup championship, and one team had to lose, and one team's drought would continue. And for Hamilton Tiger Cat fans, boy, I bet you they did not think it was going to be them after that 15 win season. But the Bombers pulled it out. From the Hamilton side, what did you make of the game? It just seemed like a couple of early errors that Winnipeg defense stomped on them a little bit, and they were able to get the lead and then play it safe. How did you make of Hamilton's play overall?
It was kind of, I mean, it's unfortunate. Like you said, they had such a good season.
Yeah.
A franchise record for wins, undefeated at home, and then they go out and the Grey Cup happens to be the worst game they play of the year.
Right.
And they just didn't look like themselves. And you know, I think the one thing that I think about, you were right, there were the mistakes. I think three turnovers on the first four possessions, is damning. They survived that somehow. And then, I think what really did them in was just the aggression of Winnipeg's defense. It felt like Dane Evans had no time to operate. And they were all over him. Even Speedy Banks, I feel like Speedy got hit more times in the Grey Cup than he did all season. You know, that may not be 100% accurate, but it just felt like that. Like, it felt like they had bodies on Speedy every single time he got the ball, whereas you just didn't see that so much during the season. And they just dominated them. And I think that the interception on the first possession just set the tone. And I think once that defense saw kind of what it could do and just, I think, had it validated early on, I think there was just no stopping them.
Well, and then Brandon Banks having to leave in the third quarter because of a leg injury and all that, like it just kind of piled on at that point there. And we have to remember, too, for Dane Evans, this is a guy who came in partway through the season for Jeremiah Masoli and played lights out. Like, this is his first look at a championship here. So I still think when you look forward, the future is bright for him in that Ticats offense. What do you feel is going to happen in Hamilton at quarterback? Because, man, it would have seemed ridiculous to think at the beginning of last season, oh, yeah, they'll just move on from Jeremiah Masoli for the backup. But that's a real possibility.
Yeah, it's something you got to think about. I think even in terms of the injury itself, you know, I've heard different things on just the timetable for return, and I think the Ticats will probably clear that up, but their season ending availability, I think that's Tuesday. But if that's a knee injury that takes longer than the off season, if Masoli won't be ready, sometimes you see these things. You know, guys aren't ready till Labor Day, and even if they're back in action, it's going to take them some time to kind of get back to themselves. I mean, I think Dane Evans is going to have a really important role for the Ticats this coming year, and that's assuming that they re-sign Jeremiah Masoli, right? He's a free agent going into this winter. So they'll have to make a decision there. But, I mean, Dane Evans put together a really impressive resume and has a strong argument, you know, to show that he can lead that team. He's under contract, I think, through this coming season as well. So, and I would assume at a kind of a cheaper rate than most starting quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that the Ticats could work on in the offseason as well if they want to go that route. But, they've got a big decision to make. And, you know, I think the injury for Masoli will factor into that a lot. But again, the strong play that Evans showed, I mean, I don't want to put it on him. I don't think it was solely his fault the way the Grey Cup went, but he only looked like a rookie at that Grey Cup game. And an incredible season. He had poise from his first start after Masoli got injured all the way through the playoffs. And, you know, he led a dominant team through the second half of that season.
Oh, yeah. And you have to obviously think, okay, now he's been through it. you're still going, if you can bring the majority of the core back for this Hamilton team, which it looks like they should, there's nothing to say you can't get back to the dance in an East division. Like, I love what Montreal was able to do, and boy, if they could add some pieces there and shore things up with seemingly have found their quarterback in Vernon Adams Jr. and their head coach in Kahari Jones. Nothing is a sure thing for the Argos or the Red Blacks. Like, there's no reason to think that Ticats cannot be back in this game next season.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think you look at the way things are right now, and Hamilton will be the team to beat in the East, I think, again. I think, like, you look at what the Ticats have, you look at the job that Drew Alamang and Sean Burke did as the GMs there. They've just got depth everywhere. That's a team that dealt with a ton of injuries. I mean, quarterback's the one that everyone's going to look at, but, you know, their D-line was kind of hit pretty hard throughout the season. They went through five running backs this year, I think. Jeez. And it ended up with Tyrell Sutton playing in the Grey Cup game. But they got production out of that position all year, despite, I think, at least two season-ending injuries at that spot. You look through that roster, they've built it really well. I feel like that group, and again, if they keep it together and make the right decisions at quarterback, and it works out for them there, that's a team that could be in Grey Cups for the foreseeable future. I think that's a very realistic option for them. And you mentioned Montreal too. I spoke with Henoch Mwamba at the CFL Awards. We are leading into the awards this past week in Calgary, and he said that he's getting a lot of interest from players around the league, pending free agents and things like that. Guys that are curious about Montreal that weren't in the past. And I think it's always been kind of a destination city around the league, but not a destination for on-field performance the last 4 or 5 years. And that changed this season. And, I think Kahari Jones is an infectious kind of coach. I think people would want to play for him, just kind of watching him have the year that he's had. I think the East will be interesting. And I think Montreal's possibly in a position to get better. I think Hamilton is still going to be the team to beat in the East.
In conversation with Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca on Twitter, at O'Leary. Chris, you got a great piece up, speaking of Kahari Jones, up on CFL.ca, and you just you tweeted it out on Tuesday as well. This has the making of something where, if you were to plan it out, obviously you wouldn't go this route, but sometimes the way things work, it just clicks and the right people find each other. And it looks like Vernon Adams and Kahari Jones are just in complete lockstep. We talked about it in earlier episodes of Third and Long here, Chris, where, the head coach leaves before the end of the preseason. The GM gets fired. The league owns the team. You had every excuse in the world to suck, yet you didn't, and you banded together. And it was incredible. So now I think the mindset for Montreal goes from just, okay, the typical last few off seasons, let's try to find a quarterback and everything else, whatever. Now you got the QB, you got the head coach, now you can really start to build pieces. So I think this offseason for Montreal is going to be vital to prove, okay, what type of team are you going to be, and what type of contender are you realistically going to be in 2020?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's funny, like you said, and we've talked about it before, but you look at the way the table was set for them at the start of the season. And if we were talking now and they'd won three games this year, I don't think anyone would have questioned that, right? No. They would have just said, yeah, of course. Yeah, look what happened to them. But I think Kahari Jones is a huge, if not the biggest part of that, I think, just in for like changing the culture and getting those players to buy in, which I think is probably the hardest thing to do there, where you're coming off of so many years of missing the playoffs and kind of being the punching bag for the rest of the league, to get your players to buy in and believe that they're good, they can win. That was incredible. And then you have the emergence of Vernon Adams Jr., who I think the one thing I'll think about after their season ended was Vernon Adams just sitting at that table in the post game and just kind of making it very clear, almost demanding, they had to re-sign Kahari Jones, and that he was the reason that a lot of this had happened, and that, winning is kind of what really turns that organization around and kind of puts the energy back kind of into things in terms of the fan interest and things like that. They're a strong pairing, and it's such an important thing, right, to have a quarterback and a head coach on the same page. And they're two guys, and I can't remember, we might have spoken about this before, but I've done kind of longer profiles on each guy, and they're both very similar. They grew up in California. Their fathers coached them as they were kids and pushed them really hard. Got the most out of it. And I've spoken with both of their dads, and they actually said the same thing, that their goal was to coached them so hard that, you know, whatever they face next, whether it was like in their high school coaches or the college coaches or beyond, you know, they'd be ready for it. There'd be nothing tougher than the coaching that their dads gave them. You know, and I know that they connected over that through this season. Like I think they see things a lot of the same way. They relate to each other. And, you know, and you can see that on the field and with that team. Like, it's just a cohesive unit. And it'll be tough. I think there's going to be challenges there for them next year. You know, I don't think teams are going to sleep on them the way that some of them might have this year.
No.
And, so, you know, I think teams will be ready for them next year, and they're going to have to kind of take that step. You know, they were in a lot of close, kind of heart-stopping comeback wins. You know, I think part of that next step would be kind of avoiding those situations and just winning the games that you're supposed to. But it's going to be fun, and it's nice to talk about Montreal just finally kind of being back in that conversation.
Yeah.
And you know, when they're good, it's good for the league, and it strengthens the East Division. It kind of just makes things more competitive. It's a lot more fun when the Alouettes are good.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% there. So that's going to be fascinating to monitor their off-season maneuvers. In conversation with Chris O'Leary, senior writer for CFL.ca on Twitter, at O'Leary Chris. Now, the bottom two teams in the CFL could use a quarterback there, Chris. This is always interesting when it comes to the CFL offseason quarterback movement, and maybe this offseason more than ever, because you have Jeremiah Masoli, who could be available depending on health. Nick Arbuckle had a heck of a season in filling in for Bo Levi Mitchell out in Calgary. What are you feeling, or what type of quarterback movement potentially should fans be looking out for this offseason when it relates to the East and elsewhere?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think, you start in the East and you look at Ottawa, who clearly has a need. You look at Toronto, who, you know, I think McLeod Bethel-Thompson is capable, and maybe he could have done better with more around him. But, you know, I think they're probably going to look for a new starting quarterback as well. I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be as significant I don't think the numbers will be there in terms of quarterback movement the way it was last year in free agency, or I guess in the winter of this year in free agency. But there is potentially substantial movement to be made. We talked about Masoli. Matt Nichols is a free agent and also recovering from an injury. I would imagine that he wants to stay in Winnipeg. You know, and Zach Collaros, who played, yeah, you know, just played out this unbelievable story to win his first Grey Cup as a quarterback, you know, is going to be out there as well and available. There are teams that have to make decisions. You mentioned Arbuckle, you know, who did very well, I thought, in the absence of Bo Levi Mitchell. You know, the one thing you always hear with Arbuckle is, you know, if a team can pry away Ryan Dinwiddie from Calgary, who was, I think, the quarterback's coach this year, you know, there's talk about him making the move to OC. I think Toronto tried to get him last year when they were kind of making their pitch for Bo Levi Mitchell that failed. It'll be a ripple effect. I don't know how big the splash will be, but there will definitely be a ripple effect depending on, you know, I think it starts with Masoli, it starts with Nichols, Collaros, and then Arbuckle, I think, will be a big one that, you know, I think could potentially change a team. And, you know, you look at Ottawa and Toronto, they're teams that are definitely in need of that change.
Well, Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time all season long for jumping on the show with me, both different shows throughout the season, and appreciate you taking the time, buddy. Take some downtime and enjoy the off season, because heck, we know next year will be here before we know it.
No, definitely. You know, it's going to be quiet probably for a day or two, and then Inevitably something will happen. Someone will get signed, someone will get fired or something.
Yep.
And it's off season, but it's never really a quiet time in the CFL.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, thanks so much, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
And there he goes, Chris O'Leary. Get him on Twitter, at O'Leary Chris, and check out all his fine work as senior writer for CFL.ca. One of the heroes of the 107th Grey Cup, he tied a record for field goals made. It is Justin Medlock of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Kicker, punter, I will chat with him next here on Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back to Third and Long, Canada-wide across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. Make sure you follow on Twitter at AndyMC81 and the show at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL. Still to come, we'll head out to Calgary to chat with Danny Austin, covers the Stampeders and the CFL for the Calgary Herald and Sun. But joining me now, it is the newest Grey Cup champion, part of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, kicker Justin Medlock. Justin, how are you doing, my friend? How's it feel?
It feels great. Just been a wild couple of days, but actually been probably a wild, like a week and a half. So, glad to get it done and good for the city.
Well, now, have you had the parade? Is the parade over for you? For you guys?
Yeah, the parade is over. That was pretty hectic, crazy. That was a lot of fans, probably about 3 or 4 times bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Wow.
So, it was awesome for the city and glad we had a good turnout.
Well, that's what happens when it's your first championship since 1990 and the passion of that fan base. Like, Justin, listen, you probably don't have to buy a dinner in that town for quite a few years. That's pretty good.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I wish. That'd be a great thing. But it was awesome to get the win and, end this drought.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? So yourself, and I know you're a modest and humble guy, but you tied a Grey Cup record, 6 made field goals. You're a big part of that victory. And for yourself, you've kicked in for so long in so many different situations. What was the pressure internally like for you? Did it feel any different for you going physically out there, making the kicks, especially near the end as the game was starting to get put away? Did you feel any different knowing in the back of your mind, this is for the big one, this is for the Grey Cup?
Yeah, no. I was definitely a process over outcome. I think, that's kind of the way I have to think about things just in general. I never let the moment kind of get bigger than it needed to be. I was just trying to stick to my process the whole time. Kind of started out a little rough and ended up the game pretty well. So I was glad that I could put some points on the board and, help the team. That was the biggest thing, and points are valuable. And glad to, it amounted to, 20 points or whatever. So
awesome.
We needed it.
In conversation with Justin Medlock, Grey Cup champion kicker for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, Justin, you have a unique, relationship when it comes to Zach Collaros, being that you played with him in Hamilton the year I did the play-by-play for the Ticats in 2015. It was you and Zach, and Collaros was on that tear, we remember, right? MOP, then he got injured and went down. So for you, you played with them then. You saw now just the combat, what he went through, 3 different teams, the injuries. To see him, a former teammate, and you know the grind he's been through, to get that win, to be a part of it, to lead this team to the Grey Cup and get a ring. What do you think that means to him? How special was that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was pretty awesome. I mean, I was with him in, 15 and 14. So, we had a good little run there. We were pretty hot, before he got injured. I was glad to have him aboard. I knew he could do it. He was a great quarterback and just needed to be in the right system. We have a great system here, and I knew he'd step up and be in the right place. I think just in general for himself, just as himself as a player and individual, I think it was pretty awesome. I'm sure he wanted to prove some people wrong, but also, step up into the clutch. And, his name is cemented into this little great fraternity here in Winnipeg, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you guys are legends now in that city, and yours is in there as well. Justin, for yourself, and you said, I think, and you have to be as a kicker, you have to go process over outcome. Once it ended, it sunk in, the game's over. You've grinded your career. You played for Toronto, for Hamilton, and now this being your 4th season in Winnipeg. Just personally, what does this mean to you as a professional, as a guy, and knowing that, hey, whenever they go, there's been 107 of these things, and now you're a part of that?
Yeah, I mean,
kind of humbling, isn't it?
It's crazy. I mean, you look around. I'm really close to some of the guys here that rookies here, and trying to groom them to try to be like really good special teamers and just players for our team. And it doesn't really just come out like this all the time, where you just come your first year and you win a Grey Cup. It doesn't happen like that. Obviously, for me, it went 9 years, and finally was able to win a Grey Cup and win a ring. But when I first got in the league, I just was like, just enjoy it and have some fun. I was 3-15. Our team was terrible. And, from starting when I came here in Winnipeg, team wasn't very good. And then, we made the playoffs, and then, we did a little bit better. And then we, made it to the West Final, and then we won a Grey Cup. So it's a stepping stone, and hopefully this team just continues to get better.
What makes this team special, Justin? Like you said, it's a good group of guys. You're now at the stage where you can be a mentor and a teacher to the special teams. But overall, from Coach O'Shea to Kolaris to just the whole unit, you guys overcame a lot with the quarterback injuries, with suspensions at times, right? Like there was a lot to overcome. What kept this group together? Because there were times that this season that things could have gone the other way.
Yeah, I mean, this team has just a great locker room. Yeah, I've been in some great locker rooms before. You know, I think CFL has some great locker rooms. We have a great locker room. And when things just kind of got a little rocky there in the middle, we all kind of stuck together. And, we love each other. And it's always a good thing that, you know, when you have a good locker room and everybody wants to fight for each other and, you know, win for each other and, you know, win for their coach and, you know, all the leaders out there. So, I'm proud of these guys, and it's all because of this locker room.
Yeah, no doubt. Last one for you here, Justin. What do you got planned for the offseason now, man? You won. You got the parade. I'm assuming you get a little downtime, I hope.
Yeah, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to drive 36 hours, probably think a little bit for about 36 hours, a little deep thoughts with Meddy. And I'm going to get home and do some daddy duties and hopefully not get yelled at by my wife too much. And then just get home and get on the boat. That's about it. That's my first thoughts. I haven't even really thought about anything else past that.
To do that. Well, man, listen, I am very, very happy for you, for Zach and the whole team there. Congratulations. I know you're going to enjoy it. Very well deserved. So congrats and have a great offseason. And hey, we'll see you kicking balls before we know it in 2020.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
And there he goes. Justin Money Medlock tying the Grey Cup record for 6 made field goals. And yeah, him and Zach being together on that Hamilton team, that was a damn good team. That was a good team, folks, I'm telling you. But when Zach went down, Jeremiah came in that season, and he was near retirement. He had one leg out of the door in the league in 2015 and then helped take over, look good, look better the next year, and then was off to the races for Jeremiah Masoli. But for Medlock and Kolaris to do it, and Justin is, I got to know him a little bit when I was calling the games in Hamilton a few years ago. Genuinely good guy. You can tell, very understated, very humble, nice man. And that is, you always like to see people like that do well. And he certainly came through in the clutch and did it. So good on you, Justin. Good on you, Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Ticat fans, you know what, man? You'll have yours. Y'all have yours. That is a core, a group that is real good. Hamilton takes over now as the longest championship drought in the Canadian Football League, having not won it since 99, Winnipeg ends theirs from 1990. We will step aside and after the break, go out west and talk about the Blue Bombers a bit, the Ticats, the game, but also off-season storylines with the Stampeders, with the Lions, and look at the West Division with Danny Austin from the Calgary Sun and Calgary Herald as we wrap up the 2019 season finale of Third and Long. Make sure you're following us on Twitter as well at AndyMCD1 at Third and Long CFL. And you're listening across Canada on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back to wrap up the season finale edition of Third and Long across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. Make sure you get me on Twitter at AndyMCD1 in the show at Third and Long CFL, the number 3RD and Long CFL. Grey Cup's done. Off-season moves already beginning. And listen, after this show, we'll have some time off, but be right back at it come June. So thank you so much for everybody listening and supporting me, making the move over to Sportsnet in my new role, which I'm loving, and bringing this show to you across the country. So again, thanks to all the guests all season long, to all of you and everything. It's been great, but there is still some business to tend to. And boy, the game itself, the off-season maneuvers that are coming, it's going to be very interesting, as it always is in the CFL off-season. So let's go out to Calgary, Alberta, the home of the 107th Grey Cup. Danny Austin covers the Stampeders and other sports for the Calgary Sun and Calgary Herald. Danny, I want to begin with Andrew Harris of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the first running back to go for over 100 yards in 60-plus years. And you know what? The emotion, all the controversy he's been through with the suspension, he kind of let the media have it afterwards. Say, for all those talking blank, you know, here's to you, like a big middle finger all the way up and everything. What did you make of that? I kind of like the passion and the energy getting to him. And I know some people, you know, in our fair weather society, how dare you use a curse word? I thought it was real life emotion coming out. I dug it.
I mean, I'm probably one of the people who he was referring to, and I didn't care at all. I thought, you just won the Grey Cup. Say your piece. I will maintain that it is a fundamental misunderstanding of what was being said about him. I don't think it was ever personal. I think it always was sort of more tied to the need to have more clarity on some of these drug testing issues. But, man, he just won the Grey Cup. You're annoyed with some people.
Yeah.
Let it out. I mean, who cares? I'm sorry. We have all heard that word a million times. We've all used that word a million times. I hate when people tell other people to stop being sensitive, but in this case, it's appropriate because it's really not a big deal.
It would have been great if he specifically addressed you. This is for you, Danny.
Well,
that would be great.
I want to be clear. I'm not top of the list of the people he was referring to.
No.
But I would have been in there. And hey, I mean, if Andrew Harris wants to make me famous by calling me out, I'll take it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, man. So what did you make of the game overall? Because coming in, you know, myself included, I was trying to talk myself into ways that the Bombers could win. But at the back of my head, I thought I knew. It's like, well, come on. That offense is too good. It's just going to be – the defense is too good. It's going to be too much to overcome. I don't know if I want to say that the moment got to Dane Evans on the Ticat side, because a couple of those balls were tipped and probably should have been caught. But it did look like the more seasoned quarterback in Zach Collaros, even though he didn't put up prolific numbers, kind of shone through. What did you make of the two quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, I think Dane Evans was under a lot of pressure
at
sort of all times. I think that Bombers defensive line, you know, we all forget to learn the lesson every year, which is just pay attention to the defensive line. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, truthfully, Willie Jefferson hadn't been great for the last couple weeks. So, I mean, look, I think it gives the Ticats something to think about. I was sort of the opinion that no matter what, you roll with Dane Evans next year and let Jeremiah Mazzoli walk, just because it gives you more cap flexibility elsewhere. But, look, Dane Evans didn't play great. I still probably think he's going to be a really good CFL quarterback for a long time. But when he was under pressure, he didn't fully seem to know what to do. That's not surprising for a guy in his first year. But you contrast that, as you said, with Collaros. I mean, I watched Zach Collaros play all three of the last sort of Western playoff games. And his ability to just create something at the exact moment where you think that the play is over because he's going to get sacked, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like he just moves so well in and out of the pocket and finds that receiver downfield and extends drives. So, you know, I have no idea where Zach Collaros is going to land next year. I strongly suspect he's back in the GTA. But I think you said it accurately. It was a veteran who looked like he'd been there before and a rookie who didn't. And, that's not necessarily an indictment of the rookie, because there's a reason they're rookies.
In conversation with Danny Austin from the Calgary Sun and Calgary Herald, covering the Stampeders and the CFL. Danny, I've been saying through this whole playoffs that this is the Zach Collaros revenge tour. He's just conquering demons and just beat the Rough Riders who we started the year with. And then in the Grey Cup, you go head-to-head with the team that knocked you out of that first team. Like, it just seemed all too fitting. And you said, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what is next for Zach Collaros, because essentially he was a hired gun. It was a long shot. It worked out tremendously well, but the Bombers have Matt Nichols back, who they're going to have back, and you still have Chris Streveler. And for Zach Collaros, who really, and let's be honest, Danny, he is still one wrong hit away from maybe his career being over. I think it's going to be fascinating to see where he ends up and what he does with yet another new team, or maybe a new former team.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was a huge risk to have him play because of those head injuries. And it's still not a risk that I'm sure I'm particularly comfortable with the Bombers taking. The fact that it worked out doesn't mean that the risk was never there. I don't think that there is any way that any team in the CFL rolls into the season next year with Collaros as their number one option without a season backup.
Right.
I strongly believe what we saw, the Bombers would not have won the Grey Cup with Matt Nichols or Chris Trevler in at starting quarterback. They're just not as good at finding receivers, at managing the game even. He's so much better. But both for a team perspective, where you just don't want to lose your starting quarterback on one hit, and for just a health perspective, I mean, it wouldn't be bad to see the guy go out on top right now, would it?
Wow.
I mean, I'm deeply uncomfortable with the thought of him playing a full season because
me
I just think there are more injuries on the way. And I thought that always, and winning a Grey Cup doesn't change that.
No. And you know, he's such a good guy. That didn't even cross my mind. And I don't think it'll happen, but Danny, you're right. Like he had a career worth of, and I'm not saying he is looking for revenge, because that's not really his style, but as far as like, okay, you didn't believe in me, boom, I got you back. He got all the got backs, all the revenge in one playoffs, and he's got a ring. Yeah, it's like, okay, bye, I'm gonna keep my head and turn into a coach or something like that. That would be perfect.
Yeah, if you're gonna go, now's the time to go. That said, I mean, my big thing is I think there's a job in Toronto. Look, it's possible that Winnipeg would want to bring him and Streveler back. I don't know if Matt Nichols is back there next year. I thought he was a free agent. I'm not 100% sure that they want to continue that. Although if they lose Streveler and Claros, then yeah, you probably roll with them. But I think Toronto just makes sense. You have a couple of sort of backups who have played a little bit in McLeod Bethel Thompson. My understanding is Claros's wife has a job in the GTA and they have a house there. So I don't think he's needed in Hamilton, but I sure think they could use him in Toronto. And that wouldn't surprise me. But, yeah, otherwise, it would be great to see a guy say, hey, you know, I'm making a decision here based on my health. It's time to go.
Yeah, and you know what? That Toronto situation, the more you bring it up, it seems like even maybe a bit more of a ramped-up version of what they had in Winnipeg if you keep McLeod Bethel-Thompson, who – we've seen in spot starts, can put up big numbers, can come in relief. You can still kind of roll out maybe that 1-2 type of combo and at least have the Argonauts in a very strong transition situation while they maybe look for their long-term solution at quarterback. They can't get too much worse than they had this year. Good Lord.
Well, no. I mean, it's so interesting. And, like, the McLeod-Thompson situation, I think he's better than people say he is. I honestly don't think that he was the reason the Argos lost games this year. Mm-hmm. But, man, Zach Galeros, like, he was, again, the numbers weren't always there, but I was at all three games. Like, he did exactly what they needed to do, him to do, to beat the Stampeders.
That's what great quarterbacks do.
Yeah, he's a great quarterback. You take him over Bethel Thompson any day right now. And as you're saying, I just like that 1-2 combo. Mm. I think it's interesting and gives you a little bit of security.
Interesting. All right. In conversation with Danny Austin, covers the CFL for the Calgary Sun and Calgary Herald on Twitter at @DannyAustin_9. Danny, you cover the Stamps. Let's go to the Stampeders. We know perennial contenders. It seemed like everything was clicking at the right time for them. Bo Levi Mitchell off the injury came back. Just didn't work out in the big picture for winning a title. But how are they looking going into next year? We've already seen some maneuvering and roster moves from across the CFL starting to trickle in. How are the Stamps looking going into 2020?
I mean, I think they're looking pretty good. You know, they weren't going to admit it, but this year was sort of always a rebuilding year. They lost so many players the last two off seasons, and this year there were just so many young guys, first-year guys in starting positions. And it's not the interesting answer. You know what I mean? Like, people want to hear the big, sexy free agent signings and all that. But I do just think that the experience that those guys got this year, that growth that they had, is so important. Because remember, I mean, this team was, you know, one realistically had Rene Paradis in Winnipeg in that second last game of the year. Had he hit a convert instead of missing it and having the Bombers run it back, the Stampeders were going to win the West and be hosting a game in the West final. Mm-hmm. The temperature wouldn't have been minus 20. Might have been a little bit different, you know, the whole season. So I honestly, like, I didn't really overreact to that loss in the West semifinal. I think that this team's had such sustained success, and I think it drops off. Look, you're going to lose Nick Arbuckle. There'll be one or two guys who, at the very least, get NFL looks, whether or not, I mean, I expect Reggie Begelton, sort of first and foremost, whether those guys are gone or are back next year, because I know that they like Calgary, they like the Stampeders, they like what the organization does. I don't know, but nobody needs to worry about the Stampeders. That's the one thing I can say. They don't deserve to be worried about, and they're going to be good next year.
They just seem to be one of those teams that just finds a way to figure it out. And one team, Danny, we thought was going to be, well, much better than they were because of the addition of Mike Riley, where the BC Lions, it is going to be a new head coach, and you still have Riley there at that high price. You need to get that offensive line better. That's, I think, probably phase one. But you do have a core. What do you expect out of the BC Lions? This, granted, heck, there's going to be some free agent movement, but assuming they can shore up the O-line, should we be bullish on the Lions early on looking to next season?
I mean, you should be cautiously optimistic, okay, in part because they were better in the second half than they were in the first half, right? They had some growth. I'm not going to directly tie that to the coaching change. I don't know that getting rid of Clay Brooks and bringing in Rick Campbell, which is what it sort of looks like, is probably going to happen. That's not me breaking news. That's me like reacting to news that I've seen on Twitter.
But
I don't know that that necessarily, you know, wins you those games. But go out, get those offensive linemen. I mean, I don't think it's that complicated. You do need to win in the trenches. My issue is like we got to get through free agency, and I don't have faith in Ed Hervey being able to get it done. He, as a GM, I just don't think he's that guy. So I would be optimistic. I would expect him to be better. The problem is, I don't see which other team is falling off in the West, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you're stealing one or two games there. But again, I think the Stampeders were a rebuilding team that's going to be ready to compete next year. The Riders, who knows? That was such a veteran team, and particularly on the defensive line, that there's going to be change. Maybe there's a slight regression, but they won the West. They're not falling out of the playoff contention. So it's, I mean, who are they knocking off, right? Who are the Lions coming in?
Edmonton,
maybe it is Edmonton.
Yeah.
But that's it. I mean, I don't see them crawling up to first and second. I don't see them hosting a playoff game. There's a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, no doubt. And for Edmonton, they underperformed to a certain degree with the talent around them. So that's going to be a situation where, yeah, like you got to get, like really, it's a great point you make, Danny. Like to get up out of last, you have to make up, let's say, 3 wins, go to 5-8 to challenge Edmonton. Okay, so you're going to do that with
exactly
with all the talent that they have, assuming year two for Trevor Harris, that they're going to be better. Yeah, you know what? You look at it. The BC Lions could get significantly better and still finish in fourth or fifth place.
Exactly. I mean, it's the weird thing about the West Division right now. It reminds me a little bit of the Western Conference in the NBA right now. Hmm. You can get good. It doesn't mean that you're going to get great.
Yeah.
And unless you get great, you're probably not making the playoffs. So, because, I mean, I really do think and the difference between those top 3 teams in the West this year was very, very slim. We saw it come right down to the wire. And, you know, look, I don't expect the Bombers to come back next year and be, you know, look the way they did in the playoffs all season. But, again, find me where BC wins. I just don't see it.
I like it. Danny, thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate the time. People can find your great work on Twitter. You send it out at DannyAustin_9. And continue your great stuff for the Calgary Sun and Herald, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, man. Take care.
And there he is, Danny Austin. All right, folks. That's it. That does it. The 2019 Canadian Football League season in the books. Congrats to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for becoming the Grey Cup champs, for breaking that drought. And, hey, it's a short offseason, man. It'll be May and June before we know it, and we will kick off the 2020 season. So make sure you're following on Twitter, at AndyMC81, and the show at Third and Long CFL. And we will see you next season. You've been listening to Third and Long. I'm Andy McNamara across the Sportsnet Radio Network.